We are in the book of Acts in chapter 27, and it's a very special chapter in many ways. It is so rich, it's an account made up on many. I try to avoid the word stories because it has more than one meaning, we should not treat them just like stories. Sometimes stories are synonym with tales, fairy tales and stuff. And so I'm thinking of them as historical accounts. But here are so many, and I struggled to separate them, not just according to the subtitles, which are helping us, but the themes as they succeed. The accounts succeed each other, yet they are actually running into each other. And I decided that today we're going to have an overview of this, highlight the most urgent things, and then we'll go a little bit slower in the near future over every one of these accounts, as the Lord helps and leads us. This is the beginning of Paul's voyage to Rome. Just keep that in mind. Paul's voyage or journey to Rome, some classify it as Paul's fourth missionary journey. Mainly, most theologians talk about the three missionary journeys of Paul, and others say this is the fourth, and I can see why, because there's a lot taking place in this. They have a few stops on the way. But I'm not looking at that necessarily. Now, I'm looking at the thing which is, life, the energy that runs through all of this, and try to see how God is working it. And first, I want to think how we got this, just to see that it's not a story as a story. It's not just something that just happens. But sometimes one may be tempted to think that way. Especially when we look in verse 1, we read it, and when it was decided that we should sail to Italy, they delivered Paul and some other prisoners to one named Julius, a centurion of the Augustan regiment. It's a cohort. I don't think any expression, military expression, fits here, because the Romans kept on changing the sizes and the way they organize their army. So what I'm looking at here is, first is that word, it was decided. And all the versions have determined. So who determined it? Who decided that they go? We know from the last session, it was Festus, the Roman governor, who has decided that since Paul had the audience, so he had his time in court, so to speak, before two governors and then later before Herod, and they said, "Oh, this man has asked to go and be judged, or should I say assessed, by Nero." They have to do it, although they said that he's innocent. So he's a prisoner, he's innocent. So we see Paul, a man with a very special, status as a prisoner. Yet he's a luxury prisoner. Is a prisoner that can move around. and other things. So the one that determined, at least the beginning of this journey, was the governor. Then he handed them over to Julius. Julius was a centurion of that Augustan regiment, probably returning to Rome to take some other work. And with that occasion, he was entrusted with a bunch of about 276 people on the ship, but most of them were prisoners that they had to take to Rome. So it was determined or decided by Festus. It was carried out by Julius. Okay? And how did the story overruled, we'll see through that, it's overruled, it's coordinated by God, in fact. And the story, the account made it to us as reported by Luke. And it's also endorsed or approved by Paul. And we know that in more than one account, Paul refers to either events of this journey or the very presence in Rome when you read the 2 Timothy chapter 4, which is written from Rome. So he made the journey. So this account is true. There was such a thing as Paul's journey to Rome. And that's important to us. And why I'm saying this is not just because I want to make it look smart. It's important because we will see throughout this chapter how men are present and men make decisions, yet it is God that controls everything and God is in charge of everything. And sometimes God changes the outcome of men's decisions. They think it's best to do one way, God has another way. Why? Because God has his own purpose. So the first leg of this journey is from Caesarea to Fair Havens, so-called. So they go on the coast, and instead of going the way they wanted, they are ending up in a different place. Instead of going west or north, northwest, they are going northeast, because that's how the wind was permitting them to go. And instead of making it straight to Crete and probably from there to Sicily, to Rome, or Italy, they go from Caesarea and they end up in Myra or Midus, those ports on the opposite direction of where they wanted to go, because there were winds that they had no control over, and they were having sailing vessels. So this was the first one. From Caesarea and going to Sidon, from Sidon to Myra, they go with that one ship, the one that they boarded when they left from Caesarea, and they ended up there. So they entering the ship at Adramyttium, we put to sea, meaning to sail along the coast of Asia. So along the coast of Asia, that's not towards Italy. That's east, north, northeast. So they are going along that coast in order to take advantage by the wind. And the next day they landed at Sidon. Sidon, you know, it's on the coast, today's Lebanon. From Sidon, then they, because the winds were contrary, they say when we had sailed over the sea, which is of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra, a city of Lycia. We said that. They didn't go where they wanted to go. So they are carried by the wind. There is a decision made initially that they should get somewhere, and this decision had Rome in mind, yet they don't follow the path as they expected, but as the wind forced them to go. Now what I want to say, because we will come back to all of these events, what I want to say is the spiritual aspect of what is going on. Just listen to me, because they are important things, very important things. When they go, you know, from Adramatium, they were meaning to sail along the coast of Asia. Aristarchus, the Macedonians, was with us. And the next day they landed at Sidon, and Julius allowed Paul to go and be with friends. The special thing of Paul, he was a prisoner and he was not a prisoner, he was innocent, yet he was a prisoner. So confusing. This is the peace and freedom that the world is giving, so that you can never be happy. But what we will see here in verses 9 to 14 are very important to there, because this is when we can see the spiritual things taking place. First, so they arrived at Fair Havens. They are in the north, and then they said, "Oh, we'll go." And Fair Havens are all the way on the coast of Crete. So they go back close to where they initially wanted to arrive. They go to Fair Havens because the wind permitted them to go there this time, and they stop there. We don't know why they stopped there, because now they are no longer in the same ship or boat that they were initially. They took another one that delivered them this way. So, what we see here in verse 10. Let's read verse 9 too. Now when much time had been spent and sailing was now dangerous because the fast was already over. What fast is he talking about? So this one will enter in the professional area of navigating in those days. The fast, he's talking about the Atonement Day, the fasting of Israel, the Atonement Day, the Day of Atonement. So when they are traveling now, it's sometime mid-October. Remember the 7th of October last year? They are in the middle of October, and the Romans and the Greeks knew one thing, that after September, you don't try to navigate on the Mediterranean, because you won't succeed. It's dangerous. So the whole autumn and winter period, and October is mid-autumn, and winter period is dangerous for sailing, so you don't do that. Now, professionals were still trying to do it, and the ship that they boarded was a larger one, because this was a grain ship from Egypt that was taking them further. They were in doubt as to what to do, whether to go or not to go. The so-called fair havens were not that fair, and not really havens, because, they were only a temporary thing, and they were protected from the wind that brought them there, and they were protected from that wind coming from the north. But soon, because the season is changing, they will be exposed to wind, and was dangerous for the boat to be in that place. So, was fair and not fair. It was bad for them to stay and bad for them to continue the journey. Keep that in mind. Because Paul now advised them in verse 10, "Men, I perceive that this," mark the word perceive, "I perceive that this voyage will end with disaster and much loss, not only of the cargo and ship, but also our lives." So he perceives. He doesn't say, God told me, the Holy Spirit came to me, or an angel, as he says later in a continuation of the account. But I perceive, so I would call that a common sense advice. So Paul was not very much into navigation, because he was from Tarsus. He was for an inland man. He was not a seaman. But he had enough theoretical knowledge, just like me and a lot of things. You know, I don't know much, but I can give advice. And if you follow, we are both in trouble. You for listening and me for giving the advice. So the situation here, Paul is speaking, is using his common sense, because he knows how the seasons change. And he knew, just as we know a lot of things by reading, by hearing, by people talking to us, even by sometimes being caught up in certain situations. So, he's advising them not to do. It's going to be a disaster. So he would kind of say, don't move, stay. But to stay was just as dangerous than moving. And now, so common sense was the first one. Nevertheless, the centurion was more persuaded by the helmsman and the owner of the ship than by the things spoken by Paul. So here you have common sense in conflict with professional skills. Think about this, because that's what we have here. Paul is using common sense. Everybody knew that, so it was common knowledge. His was very strong, probably, but common knowledge. But the centurion is talking with the helmsman, which is the captain, the one that is at the helm, the one that is, I don't know another word for that. I can tell you many words in my language. But he's the one that holds the pilot, but pilot was the captain then. Yeah, okay. So you have the other version. So the helm is that big thing that moves the rudder.
It's steering wheel.
The car has that. But that's a helm. It's only one word for that. Helmsman, and there was also the owner of the ship was there. It's the discussion is there. So the owner was the owner. The helmsman was the captain. He was the navigator. But Julius was in charge. You see how the world is working? How many layers of authority they have? So Julius agrees with these people, because they are professionals. But there's still, the conflict remains. Common sense says one, professional skill says another. But then we have a third layer here. Verse 12, because the harbor was not suitable to winter in, what I was trying to say earlier, the majority advised. So you have common sense, you have professional skill, and you have the majority, the democracy. The majority advised to set sail from there also, to move. If by any means they could reach Phoenix, a harbor of Crete opening towards the southwest and northwest, and winter there. So they said, oh, probably we can reach that, or, you know, take a right and then move there, go into a kind of a gulf or bay, whatever that is, and stay there over the winter. So we have a decision that was well taught. It's not a bad thing. In day-to-day life, it's very good to have more than one advisor. And very often the majority is right, but so often the majority can be wrong. I don't know. But what's happening later? This is where I want to head, and I hope I will. They are not like these people. When the south wind blew softly, supposing that they have obtained their desire, that they get what they wanted, putting out to sea, they sailed close by Crete. So they were using the island as a protection against the wind. So they are doing that. And they say, oh yeah, it's fine, we made a good decision. But now, another one takes over. Not long after, a tempestuous head wind arose, called Euroclydon, or Euraculon in some more modern versions. Doesn't make the word easier to pronounce. So this was a head wind. That's bad news for the sailors. Because you want to go forward, and that one doesn't let you go forward. Like we know from ancient times, reading the stories, that the same wind is making the sailing ship go in every direction by the way you use the rudder and the combination of sails on the ship. But when it's right from the front, a headwind, you are a no-hoper. So, something is happening here. When the headwind, a tempestuous, stormy headwind arose called Euroclydon. So, when the ship was caught and could not head into the wind, we let her drive. So they allowed the ship to be drifting. Instead of fighting the world, the wind, let the wind have the control, so they thought. So what we have in here, actually, the key will be all the way in verses 23 and 24, or 21 through 24, more like it. I read the verses. After long abstinence from food, he asked the people, the storm is coming, they are in trouble, and he says, now the only way to do it is to throw everything, eat well, and throw all the resources, throw everything in the water, for we are going to be in trouble for a long time. So, after long abstinence from food, Paul stood in the midst of them and said, men, you should have listened to me and not have sailed from Crete and incurred this disaster and loss. So he says kind of, I told you so. It's bad when this happens, but even Paul here, we see he's using his human mind, his common sense, even here. And he says, my common sense was better than your professional skill or the will of the majority. Although he wasn't sure if God would have told him, Paul would have used different words. For now it's happening. And now I urge you to take heart. I encourage you. For there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the sheep. And now we come to the key of the whole thing. For there stood by me this night an angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I serve, saying, do not be afraid, Paul. You must be brought before Caesar, and indeed God has granted you all those who sail with you. So this is the key of the whole account. We had a competition between the common sense, the professional skills, the voice of the majority, and as I said in verse 15, we were realizing that all those came to nothing, and they had to let the ship drift. We let her drive. In other words, just, you know, make sure you kind of block the rudder and let whatever may be, whatever will be. But it wasn't so. Because the helm's job is ended. The opinion of the majority is proven wrong. And the opinion of Paul, with his common sense, is proven wrong this time, or at least useless. For someone else is taking over. They thought they allowed the boat, the ship, to go drifting. But there is someone else who actually took over. The invisible captain, the invisible navigator, pilot, helmsman, the one who brought the wind. Winds come when you least expect them, when you need a proper wind, you know, to take you somewhere. You get a headwind and you don't know what to do. But if there is somebody who is above even nature and controls that, one must think that there is a higher purpose that has priority or takes priority over all of them. And here we can see that that purpose has, three goals. One, the glory of God's name. So Paul makes sure he tells them, my God says this. He sent an angel who stood by me and told me this. So the glory of God's name, his God can do it. So he says it and God will prove it. The second, which was the purpose of the journey for Paul, Paul must make it to Rome. Even when he used his common sense, he was afraid that they will shipwreck on the way. He didn't know what God will do, but he wants to go to Rome. So using his common sense, he said what he said, and we know the rest. So Paul must make it to Rome, and the third is the salvation of all the passengers. I'm saying salvation, whether it's rescue from drowning or God is giving them to him in a way, you know, that they will be a fruit of his testimony of the power of God. And all of those people will say, yes, there is a God. Paul's God is God. We trust in him. There are many dangerous journeys in life. And we, because we are human, we get concerned, we get afraid. Soon we get anxious, and instead of getting better, we get worse, and we don't know what's going on. Let me use this story about myself again, nothing new. On the way here this morning, Professor Staley, who thinks he saved my leg, the last surgeon that operated, called us. And I respect him a lot. And he said, look, I am not only retired, I'm deregistered. He says, I gave up on my registration and now I'm a builder, because he's rebuilding his one of his homes. He wants to make it a $25 million house. That's his eternity. But he says, I want to hand over your paperwork to another doctor who took over from me at Royal Prince, which Alfredo Albert, RPA, so that I'm not in danger, RPA, and I want to send you a letter and you'll organize an appointment with him to see what x-rays he wants to further do and blah, blah, blah. You know, they want more money. But, because when you go there, you spend $1,000 a day. I said, Professor, very good, I appreciate this, but You know I'm happy, and you know I'm out of any danger, and as a matter of fact, I don't even take antibiotics anymore. I'm fine. And I'll do what you say. You always did what I said. See, this is why it's well with you. And why I'm saying this, men think they have their way. But all the way, I said, even your skills are in the hands of God. They are a gift from God that through you, God is blessing me and helping me. And I did say that to all, every doctor that I was in contact with. You know why I trust you? Because I think you are a gift of God to me. Your talent, your skill is a gift from God. You worked hard for it. That's true. We all have to work. Israel had to fight the enemies, but God says, I'm fighting for you. You go and fight, and I'll do the fight, actually. So, anyway, I'm saying this. We can get anxious. And if we rely so much on the palpable, the touchable things, as doctors and means, we will get more anxious. And we are not getting well because we see that the things are degrading instead of getting better. So the secret of peace is simple. Trust in God and leave it with Him. And He will take you to that harbor, which is the true safety, which is the safety that He's providing for you. That's what I'm thinking about when I read this text. This is why I said all what I said in the introduction. Festus made his decision. Julius took over. He was a wonderful man because he respected Paul and gave him the freedom that Paul had the right to it. And that's, you know, this is how the politicians do. They take your freedom, they give you a little bit at a time. And back then you say, what a good politician this is. No, it's not like that. They take it first and they give you bits and bits and bits and pieces after that. Now, so, just let's put it in just short. Common sense did not prevail. Professional skills failed. The vote of the majority led nowhere because God took over to make sure that His purpose, which is above all, is actually the one that's being fulfilled. This is how I see all this story. We'll look at the whole chapter bit by bit, like I said. This is the third time I said these things. So, when we think, and it looks like, we are adrift. Things are not going well. Think of God. We don't know what's the purpose. But we know that God will fulfill it. Well, I'm drifting too much. Once I asked a minister who was for a while at a church who he loved, for some reasons he made a decision to leave the church and go somewhere else. And I did ask, I didn't want to talk much about it. I don't like to talk with people about personal problems unless they come to tell me. And I said, so why are you leaving? It's been a long time since I've been only treading water. You know what that is? If you're a swimmer, instead of pulling the water, you are just moving like that on the water. You're not having any progress. Or when things like that happen, just wait. For God has a reason for the situations you are in. And if you think you are wrong, ask God to reveal to you why the things are like this and what is wrong in what you are doing. So that He straightens you up, He corrects you. God has ways that you don't even know. We should not lose patience. Like you need to reach 60, go over 60 to be able to, or to reach that point when you'll say, I can wait. For you may work like all these people, and they went through all the trouble, and nothing came out of it. In the end, it was still God. I love that word. Probably it's a little bit besides the subject, but When Paul says we are dead in our trespasses and sins and this and this and this, and then it comes, you know, like all of a sudden the clouds are moving away and you see the sun. But God had a different plan. God did it His way. And you come to the point to say, I didn't do it my way. And thank God. For when God does it His way, He makes everything beautiful in its time. So you have to wait. It's not laziness in waiting. It's strength. Those who are always going left, right, forward, backwards, up and down, and working themselves to death to solve our problems. There are people who care, but I would say there are people who worry. And it takes to them just as much time worrying and fighting and doing hard things, working in the hard way, and only to reach that when God is for that to come, it will come. So the thing is, we have to pray, we have to give it to God, we keep on working patiently and wait for Him to fulfill things, because you only aggravate the situation when you start on doing this, go that, run there, run on the other side. No, that is not the way. The way is, let God be God. But pray and trust, and not use the faith as an excuse for laziness indeed, but waiting upon the Lord is strength. I want to highlight this for the second time. Those who wait upon the Lord are in their strength. And instead of going flat down, they will mount up with wings like the eagles. Or Daniel says the same thing when he says, and the people who know their God shall be strong and do great exploits. So when I know that God has been with me through everything, and everything ended up well, though sometimes it looked like an unfixable disaster, I know that this situation is not beyond God's power. He will do it. I trust Him. Even if I'm the one that sometimes causes the problems, God will do that. Like when our children do silly things, and we come to rescue, and we help the situation, and we help them. We don't do that just to show them how great we are. We do that because we love them. And God loves us. And He has our best at heart. He knows better everything we need. And not only that He knows better, He can do everything. So everything that bothers us, that annoys us, that makes us suffer, we have to give them to Jesus. Give them to God. And He will take care of that. Oh, but this takes so long, and so what? So what, can you do it? No, you can't. When Jesus said that the Ethiopian can't change his skill, the color of his skin, no matter how hard he works. We know one in America, he was not an Ethiopian, who tried to get all the hormones and everything because he didn't want to look the way God made him. And he ended up a monster and he died. And you know who I'm talking about. If you don't know, you don't lose anything. So, a leopard can't change his spots. So why worry? These people could not get anywhere. They ended up to let the ship go adrift. They didn't know that the captain is at the helm now. And he will take it right to the point where he wants it to go. Because he's got his purposes. And his purposes cannot be frustrated, cannot be, I use a modern word, thwarted. His purposes will come to pass. We have to remember that. And every day of our lives is part of God's purpose. We only live as long as God has allowed us to live. It doesn't matter how much we try to avoid death. When it's to come, it comes. It comes to the one that suffers for years and years and years and years fighting bad diseases. And it comes to someone who is in the flower of their youth, in their 20s, 30s. The ones that we say have the whole life ahead of them. No, no, no. They died, they already had their whole life. Because that is what was granted to them by God. We were praying for Pastor MacArthur because he just had a surgery. They changed another aortic valve on his heart. And he is well now, in recovery at home. But he lives as long as God has allowed him to live. And we pray for him. And we pray for one another. And we are concerned about one another. But let God be God. And he will do this. He will do it his way. He will guide you to the right place in the right time. And he will make sure that you are all right. The last thought is, in the midst of all of this trouble they had, everyone seems to be worried on that ship. Everyone was worried. They gave up any hope of life. And in a moment like that, it is Paul that takes over. He's God's servant, he's God's child, and he displays trust and courage and leadership amid anxiety-generating circumstances. Gee, I'm a good writer. I don't know how to write short sentences. That's my problem. So he's displaying all of these things. And the people can see he's not only talk about God and faith. No. He really trusts God. And he's the only one with a clear mind in those days. He's the one that makes sure that everyone on the board of the ship will be safe. Because God has already promised him. And he's the one giving order. He's the one that is stopping the crew of the ship who wanted to cheat. And they had their safety rowing little boat, the skiff. They had that there. They said, oh, we're going to put some ropes on the back at the rudder so that the wind is not going to turn the ship in every direction and hit it over the rocks. And we do that, Paul said, no. They are taking the skiff down and they want to run. If these men are running away, everyone aboard will die. So he stops them. He becomes actually the commander of everything and everyone there. And they all now trust him and respect him. And yes, the outcome is great because they all are saved. He says in verse 37, in all, we were 276 persons on the ship. And they all are alive. So when they ate, they threw all the provisions in the water, the ship lightened, and it could move from the top of that reef where they were blocked. And they all start swimming in an organized way, like Julius says. Those who can swim, let them jump in the water first and go on swimming. And for the others who can't swim, they are using the parts of the ship, planks and things, so that they can make it to the dry land. And they end up on an island. Nobody knew where they have arrived. But they will, after that, find out they arrived in Malta. Not too far from Italy. Not too far. but farther than they wanted to go, because now they will have to go, but that's later on, because they stay for the whole season there, and later on they'll continue their journey to Italy. So let's close to this. This is the journey of our lives. This is the journey of our church. This is the journey of our nation, our families, everyone. There are different forces and authorities, or powers and authorities, that make decisions and organize parts of our journey in the life. And it looks like this is so. We learn things and we become wiser. Our common sense gets better, gets exercised by practice. Gaining skills. We learn how to work together, have democratic ways of working things out. And then God one day can prove, no, nothing of this will help you achieve my goal, my purpose. And He takes over. And we have to let Him take over. Don't lose our patience in the times when things seem to be out of control, because they will never be out of control. For we are just means, men and events, and even the nature are means in the hands of God to fulfill His purposes. May the Lord help us to walk with wisdom, with patience, trusting in Him, for the hope that He has placed in our hearts will never disappoint us. Amen.